Welcome to the deep dive. Okay, picture this. It's
Okay.
like 2 a.m., your child feels warm, you find the thermometer. Then what? That moment, the questions start flooding in, maybe a bit of anxiety. That's exactly what we're diving into today. Fevers in kids, we've got a whole stack of sources, medical guidelines, expert advice, you name it.
It's so true. Figuring out if a fever is just the body doing its thing, fighting something off, or if it's a sign of something more serious, it can feel like navigating a maze. So our mission today is really to pull out the crucial insights, help you feel more confident, more informed when your child spikes a temperature.
Okay.
We'll look at what temperature is actually too high, how long is too long, those critical warning signs to watch for, and importantly, when and where you should get medical help.
Okay, let's get into it. Our sources, they all seem to agree that a fever, yeah, it's uncomfortable, but it's usually a normal, even a helpful part of the body's defense.
Right, it's the immune system at work.
Exactly. But the tricky part seems to be that magic number. What temperature is really too high? It seems like it's not one single answer.
That's one of the most interesting takeaways, actually. Too high isn't this fixed number across the board. It really hinges on the child's age
Okay.
because an infant's system is just so different from an older child. So while a fever technically starts around 100.4 Fahrenheit, that's 38 Celsius, the point where you get really concerned shifts.
How so?
For a tiny baby, 0 to 3 months, any fever of 100.4 Fahrenheit or higher, rectally, that's an immediate call to the doctor. No waiting.
Okay, immediate. Good to know.
But then for, say, a toddler, maybe 1 to 3 years old, the concern threshold goes up to about 102.2 Fahrenheit or 39 Celsius.
Big difference.
Same for kids up to about 5 years old. And then for school-aged kids, 6 and up and adolescents, we're generally looking at 103 Fahrenheit, which is 39.4 Celsius, as the point where the number itself becomes a bigger worry, separate from other symptoms.
So it's definitely not just the number, but who the number belongs to,
Precisely.
which naturally leads to the next question.
Right?
How do you even get a reliable number? Because we've all fumbled with different thermometers
Well,
once.
absolutely. And the sources are very clear on this. The method you use really matters a lot.
Okay.
For infants and kids under 3, the gold standard, the most accurate way, is a rectal temperature. That 100.4 Fahrenheit or higher rectally is the fever mark.
Right. Maybe not the easiest, but the most accurate for little ones.
Exactly. For older kids, oral ear forehead thermometers are definitely more convenient, but you have to know what your specific thermometer considers a fever. Like an oral fever might be defined as 100 Fahrenheit or higher, while ear or forehead might use that 100.4 mark.
So read the instructions for your specific device.
Please do. Stick to one method if you can for consistency. A few tenths of a degree can make a difference in how you interpret things, especially with babies.
Okay, this is super helpful. And then there's this point that kept coming up in the sources, which I think is a game changer for parents. It's not just about the number. The child's behavior is often just as important, maybe even more so.
Yes, this is crucial. You could have, say, a relatively lower fever in a very young baby that's actually more concerning than a higher fever in an older kid who's still drinking, maybe playing quietly, acting mostly like themselves.
Right, like are they lethargic? Are they inconsolable?
Yeah.
Or are they just a bit warm, but otherwise, okay.
Exactly. It's the whole picture. The thermometer gives you data, but your eyes and instincts give you context.
Okay, so we've kind of nailed down the temperatures, the methods, the context of behavior. But let's talk about the hemlong. That's often where the anxiety really ramps up, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. Watching the clock, wondering when to worry. And again, like the temperature threshold, the duration also varies quite a bit by age.
Makes sense. Vulnerability changes.
Absolutely. So let's break it down. For babies under 3 months, remember that immediate call for any fever of 100.4.
No waiting.
No waiting on duration either. Their immune systems are just too new, too vulnerable. Things can get serious fast.
Okay. What about slightly older babies?
For children between 3 months and 2 years old, the general advice is to contact a doctor if the fever lasts longer than 24 hours and it's above that 102.2 Fahrenheit mark.
Got it. 24 hours plus over 102.2.
And then for kids older than 2, you have a bit more time. The guideline usually stretches to 72 hours, so 3 days.
3 days.
If the fever sticks around longer than 3 days, or, and this is important, if it seems to be getting worse at any point before that, definitely time to call the doctor.
Okay, that's a clear timeline. But what about those symptoms that should make you call sooner, even if you haven't hit those time limits, or maybe the fever isn't super high yet? those immediate red flags.
Yes, excellent point. Because sometimes the fever itself isn't the main worry, it's what comes with it. Our sources list several things that warrant a quicker call.
What?
Things like unusual drowsiness or poor responsiveness. You know, if your child is really hard to wake up, seems confused, isn't interacting normally, that's a big one.
Okay, definitely.
Any kind of labored or noisy breathing. Breathing issues are always serious.
Always.
Seizures, obviously. A new rash, especially one that looks like bruises or doesn't fade when you press on it.
Ah, the non-blanching rash. Okay.
And persistent vomiting or diarrhea that could lead to dehydration.
Mm.
These things mean you shouldn't wait for the 24 or 72 hour mark.
And underlying it all, the sources seem to say, trust your gut.
Absolutely, 100%. If something just feels off, even if you can't quite put your finger on it, making that call to the pediatrician is never the wrong move. Better safe than sorry.
Okay, so we've talked about initial red flags. Now let's get into those symptoms that signal a potential emergency, the things that mean get help right now.
This is moving beyond call the doctor soon to seek immediate medical attention. These symptoms, paired with fever, suggest something more serious could be going on.
What are we looking for here?
Okay, so building on what we just discussed,
That
unusual sleepiness or poor responsiveness, if it's extreme, like your child is limp, very difficult to arouse, or seems confused, that's urgent.
Okay, extreme lethargy.
Breathing problems, we mentioned labored breathing, but also watch for really fast breathing, nostrils flaring, the skin pulling in around the ribs or neck. That's respiratory distress.
Critical signs.
Ongoing vomiting or diarrhea, especially if they're showing signs of dehydration. Think dry mouth, no tears when crying, very few wet diapers or trips to the bathroom for older kids. Dehydration can escalate quickly.
Very dangerous.
Any seizure needs evaluation, but especially one lasting longer than 5 minutes. That's an emergency.
5 minutes, okay.
A severe headache or a stiff neck with fever. This could point towards something serious like meningitis.
Definitely needs checking out fast.
That unusual rash we mentioned, if it looks like tiny bruises under the skin or spreads rapidly.
Got it. And dehydration signs themselves are urgent.
Yes. Severe dehydration needs immediate fluid replacement, often IV fluids.
Now, are there kids who are at higher risk when they get a fever, where these symptoms become even more critical to watch for?
Yes, definitely. Some children are more vulnerable, and a fever warrants closer attention and often earlier intervention for them.
Who falls into these higher risk groups?
We've already stressed infants under 3 months. Their immature immune systems are the primary reason.
Right.
Then children with chronic medical conditions, things like heart disease, lung disease like asthma or cystic fibrosis, sickle cell disease, diabetes. Their bodies are already under stress.
Makes sense.
Also, children who are immunocompromised, this could be due to conditions like HIV or treatments like chemotherapy for cancer or maybe long-term steroid use, their ability to fight infection is significantly weakened.
So their defenses are down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Unvaccinated or undervaccinated children are also at higher risk for potentially serious vaccine-preventable illnesses that cause fever.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, children with a history of febrile seizures. While most febrile seizures are harmless, a history means you need to be extra vigilant.
Okay, so for these kids, the threshold for seeking care might be lower or the urgency higher.
Correct. You'd likely be in touch with your doctor much sooner.
So let's say you've decided you need help, you've seen a concerning sign, or the fever fits the criteria. Where do you actually go? The sources break down the options, right? Pediatrician, telehealth, urgent care, ER.
Yes, and knowing where to go is key to getting the right level of care efficiently. It's like a decision tree.
Okay, walk us through it. When is it your regular doctor?
Your primary care doctor or pediatrician is usually your first call. Definitely for babies under 3 months with that 100.4 fever.
Oh, yeah.
Also, for kids 3 months to 2 years, if the fever's lasted over 24 hours and is above 102.2. And for older kids, if it's past 72 hours or if it's worsening or if you just have concerns based on those less severe red flags we discussed.
Okay, so your home base for most non-emergency concerns. What about telehealth? That's become huge.
Telehealth is a fantastic option, especially for milder symptoms when your child seems generally okay otherwise.
Convenient.
Very. It's great for getting advice, discussing symptoms, maybe figuring out if you do need an in-person visit. Saves you a trip sometimes.
Any tips for making a virtual visit work?
Yeah, good question. Be in a quiet, well-lit spot. Have your notes ready. When the fever started, exact temperature readings, other symptoms like cough, rash, appetite changes.
Right.
Have the thermometer handy. List any medications your child takes or any important health history, and write down your questions beforehand so you don't forget.
Good tips. Okay, next level, urgent care.
Urgent care is sort of that middle ground. Good for things that need attention soon, but maybe aren't life-threatening, especially if your regular doctor's office is closed.
Like what kind of things?
Think maybe a lingering fever with a bad sore throat, possible strep, an earache suggesting an ear infection, maybe mild flu symptoms you want checked. They can often do basic tests there too.
Okay. And then the big one, the emergency room.
Emergency room, ER, is for serious, potentially dangerous situations. Go straight there if your child has fever, plus any of those critical warning signs we talked about. Severe trouble breathing, stiff neck, seizure, extreme lethargy or confusion, that worrisome rash.
Got it. Those major red flags.
Also, if a high fever, say over 102 Fahrenheit, persists for more than 48 hours without any improvement at all, the ER is warranted for a thorough workup.
Okay. And is there a step beyond the ER?
Yes. Call 911 immediately. This is for true life-threatening emergencies.
Like what?
A seizure lasting more than 5 minutes, severe difficulty breathing where they're struggling for air, turning blue around the lips or face, unresponsiveness. These need paramedics now.
Crystal clear. Thanks. So we've covered the scary stuff, the when to act fast, but most fevers aren't emergencies, right?
Exactly. Most are not.
So what can you do at home to make your child more comfortable while their body fights whatever it's fighting? And what about this idea that fever can actually be good?
Right. This is really important context. The goal of at-home care is mostly about comfort, not necessarily about making the fever disappear instantly.
Okay.
There's a great quote from a pediatrician, Dr. Ashley Kelly, basically saying, if things like cool compresses make your child more miserable, don't force it. Focus on rest, hydration, comfy clothes.
Comfort is key. So what are the main comfort measures?
Top of the list, hydration, crucial. Offer water, clear broths, diluted juice, electrolyte solutions like Pedialyte. For babies, keep up the breastfeeding or formula, whatever fluids they'll take.
Okay, fluids number one. What else?
You can use fever-reducing medications like acetaminophen, Tylenol, or ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin, if the fever is making your child uncomfortable.
Right, for comfort, not just to lower the number.
Exactly. And follow the dosing instructions precisely based on weight, not age. Keep a log so you don't accidentally give too much.
Yeah.
And remember, never aspirin for kids or teens due to the risk of RISE syndrome.
Critical point about aspirin. Okay.
Dress them lightly, use lighter bedding, helps their body release heat. A lukewarm bath or sponge bath can feel good, but avoid cold water that can cause shivering, which actually raises core temperature.
Ah, interesting. Oh. Lukewarm, not cold.
And encourage rest. Sleep helps the body heal. You should also monitor their temperature periodically just to keep track of things.
Okay, practical tips. Now, this idea that fever is sometimes beneficial, it feels a bit counterintuitive. Can you elaborate?
It does seem strange at first because we're so conditioned to see fever as the enemy. But physiologically, a fever is often a sign the immune system is fired up and working effectively.
How does it help?
The higher body temperature can actually help slow down the reproduction of viruses and bacteria. It makes the body a less welcoming place for those germs.
Okay.
And it also seems to enhance the activity of certain immune cells, making them better at fighting the infection. So in many cases, the fever itself is part of the healing process.
So suppressing it isn't always necessary or even helpful.
Not always, no. If your child is older than 3 months, the fever is under, say, 102 Fahrenheit. And importantly, they seem relatively comfortable, maybe still drinking fluids, resting okay, not distressed. You often don't need to give medicine just to bring the number down.
So when is it okay to just let it ride, focusing on comfort?
If they meet that criteria, over 3 months, fever not excessively high, acting reasonably okay, staying hydrated, and no serious warning signs. In that case, focusing on rest and fluids is perfectly fine. Use medicine if they seem miserable because of the fever, but otherwise you can let their body do its work.
But always keeping an eye out for those warning signs we discussed.
Always. If things change, if serious symptoms appear, if they seem much worse, or the fever persists for days without improvement, then the calculation changes and it's time to call the doctor.
Okay, that's a really helpful perspective shift.
It empowers you to see fever not just as a problem, but sometimes as a process.
So wrapping this up, we've really dug deep. We've looked at the temperature numbers, how age changes everything, the importance of how your child is acting, not just the thermometer reading. We covered how long is too long for fever, those critical warning signs that mean act now, and the different places to seek help, from telehealth to the ER.
It really comes down to context, doesn't it? Your child's age, their overall behavior, any other symptoms, those are your most important guides.
Absolutely.
And while fevers are common, usually benign, and often a sign the body's doing exactly what it should be doing, knowing when to step in, when to seek help, and how quickly, that's where the real power lies for parents and caregivers.
Yeah, it's about clarity, not anxiety. Giving you the confidence to know when to worry and when to focus on fluids and cuddles.
Precisely.
And that does leave us with a fascinating thought to ponder, doesn't it? If fever, something we often rush to treat, is actually this intricate beneficial defense mechanism, what other signals from our own bodies, these incredible internal systems, might we be misunderstanding? What else are we maybe trying to suppress when perhaps we should be listening more closely or even supporting?
That's a deep one. Definitely something to think about.
Something to consider until next time on the Deep Dive.